You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
It's time for Make the Call, a weekly discussion on the top Wisconsin sports stories of the week. You can listen to the show anytime on the free Civic Media app. Download it now on your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. Now, it's time for Make the Call, a Civic Media sports production.
Welcome in another weekend here on the Civic Media Radio Network. This is our sports show at Civic Media, Make the Call. I'm Jimmy Cuska, sports director here at Civic Media, welcoming you in for an hour of sports talk from the week, recapping this week in sports. There's a lot to talk about today, and we're going to do it all here in the next, about 45 minutes or so. Coming up in about a half an hour will be Mike Clemens. He is our Civic Media sports reporter. He has been at the NFL draft. He has been at Brewers games. He's going to be covering a Bucks head coaching press conference here in a few days. He is a man who is everywhere. Mike Clemens will be joining us later in the show. Last weekend was the NFL draft. The Packers made six selections. We are going to talk about all six of them coming up at the bottom of the hour here with our panel. And let's introduce these folks. We'll start with upper management. That is Gray Gunderson up in Park Falls. Gray, what's going on, man?
I'm coming up for air from football things. You told me that there would be a football show coming up here soon. I've been preparing. And so I actually got showered and dressed today for not. OK, I kid. I'm not coming out of a cave here, but I'm excited today.
Then we've got Parker Vertical Olson on the program as well. Parker, welcome aboard.
Oh, Jimmy. I am going to just kick back and relax. I thought about not showing up because I know Gray's got this football thing down. He's been working for weeks in the caves, so I'm sure he's prepared for this.
Well, wait a minute. We have more than just football to talk about today. In fact, we're going to spend a lot of time talking not football in this first segment and second segment as well, because these first couple of segments are what we lovingly refer to as the top 8 at 8. So this show airs at 8 in the morning. These are the 8 top sports stories from the week at 8 a.m. And number 8 this week on our list, it's the fishing opener today if you're in Wisconsin. And, well, let's just ask it. What's the biggest fish you've ever caught?
For me, it's probably a pretty common answer, a muskie just over 40 inches. You know, if you've tried for any length of time, that's probably about where you land, most of us. If you got something bigger than that, I want to know. Parker, what's your record? Got to try to see if we can one-up each other here.
So, Gray, were you here when I said that I've never gone fishing?
Ever? Clearly not. Oh, my goodness. That must have been one of the weeks I was gone. Jimmy, rescue the moment, please.
My rescuing the moment is going to go in a completely different direction. I paid $2 for a double plate at a fish fry in Owen, Wisconsin, and they gave you 4, like, just deep-fried, huge chunks of fish. For $2 more, you could double your order. 8 huge, gigantic chunks of fish on my plate. The biggest fish I've ever caught is at an Owen, Wisconsin fish fry. So that is my tall tale in the wild world of fishing. This was also, like, 20 years ago, and I've never been able to recreate that moment, so... There you go. That's my fishing story for this week. Not what you're expecting.
Better than mine.
Now I'm just wondering how this question ended up on the list when only one of us has an actual answer here. I wasn't ready for this, guys.
I mean, I'm sure I've caught something like in Boy Scouts that, you know, maybe this, I think they measured it was like almost the size of a dollar bill, and I was pretty excited about that. So, which of course our scoutmaster referred to as bait because you throw it back in to catch more bigger fish. All right, number 7 in our top 8 at 8. More serious questions here on the program. What have you watched more of this postseason, the NBA playoffs or the NHL playoffs?
I've been watching a lot of NHL playoffs, actually. I love that they are actually, like, pretty well spread out. They don't overlap all that much. So that means pretty much from dinner time to bedtime, I'm watching NHL hockey, boys.
Great answer. I'll go the other route, though, because I've been keeping an eye on the NBA this year with the historic roster in the playoffs right now between Wemby and SGA and a couple others. It's like, man, it's easy to forget that it might not be this good forever. You know, I think we're a little bit spoiled right now with NBA basketball and the superstar power that's going on. And it's, you know, it's star power NBA right now. Who knows? It may never look this good again.
I'm a big hockey guy. I love hockey. But the NBA is available on just about every streaming platform I own. And it is usually at the top of whatever. If I'm not sure what I want to watch, the NBA playoff game is sitting right there waiting for me. So that is what I have usually just gone to because it's been there present in front of my face. And I'm sure all the folks listening at the NBA are like, yeah, that's exactly why we stream our playoff games, because, you know, jokers like you are just sitting there not sure what to watch. And, oh, look, NBA playoffs. Why not? It's one click away. Number six in our top eight at eight. Let's talk some actual sports for now. And let's talk about injuries with the Brewers. Part one, the pitching staff took some hits here the last couple of days, and specifically Brandon Woodruff. And after seeing his outing, seeing the velocity drop off, are we worried now that it might be done for Brandon Woodruff as a Brewer?
This question just makes me so sad, because Brandon Woodruff is one of those guys who doesn't need to be a Brewer, right? He's just so good that he doesn't need to be stuck in small market Milwaukee anymore. But he chose to come back to Milwaukee. So I think that he is sticking with the Brewers. I think the Brewers are going to stick with him if he is able. I don't know if he's going to be able, because he has had so many issues injury-wise. That said, though, I am hoping that this injury is a bit of a nothing. It was kind of, he just said his arm felt dead. So we'll see what happens there. I'm hopeful, but when you can't tell anybody what's wrong and you're not being able to throw your fastball, then I'm concerned.
That's exactly my thought too, Parker. Nailed it on the head. Anytime you've got an injury, or you have the signs of an injury, but the explanation is lacking, I get so worried. And as always, I'll tie it to football. I think of when Jordy Nelson went down with that ACL, it's like he felt kind of weird and nobody touched him. It's just when the explanation isn't built into the moment, it's never good. It's never good. And do I think it's the end of his career? No. But when you just can't point to it, it's easy to expect the worst. So hoping for the best with Brandon Woodruff, but I am definitely worried. The answer is yes, I'm worried.
Number five in the top 8 and 8 is a very similar question, because on the other hand, we saw a couple of very prominent Brewers getting some rehab starts now in the minor leagues. So we've got some hitting coming up. So how much do you think that will help now as we go into the month of May?
Oh, Jimmy, come on, man. You know how excited I am to have Andrew Vaughn back and Jackson Chourio back. The Brewers have kind of had a little bit of an issue here and there with the lulls in hitting. I think they went like 8 games without a home run. Obviously, you don't need homers to win, but they help. Believe it or not, they help. And these guys have got that firepower. I think that they will really help. I've not even heard really a timetable on Christian Yelich at all, which concerns me. I forget. I believe it ended up being a groin
injury.
It's
Memorial Day-ish, I think, is what they've been saying for him. So
yeah, so he'll be kind of supplementary to the guys that they get back pretty quick here in Vaughn and Chourio as they're getting going down in Nashville.
Number four in our top 8 at 8. It's officially official. Taylor Jenkins will be the new Bucks head coach. He'll introduce him at a press conference on Wednesday. So we'll get the head coach. That has been checked off the list. So what's next for the Bucks?
That's a great question, Jimmy. And I think that question better be in everybody's minds. If you find somebody who claims they know, I want to know why they think that. They better have some kind of inside source, because look, winning coaches get fired in the NBA right now. What's going on with Giannis? What's going on in general with the Milwaukee market? That's a bunch of great questions. Parker, do you see anything that actually indicates even a direction that they're going? Or to me, it's just a giant question mark in Milwaukee right now.
I think that Jenkins is a guy who was around Milwaukee previously, and that's kind of what they're going for, right? I think that they're looking for someone who might appease Giannis. I am still living in the camp that Giannis is going to, if not remain a Buck, they're going to try like hell to keep him as a Buck. Yeah, I know, probably rose-colored glasses, whatever. I think that's probably the direction that they went there, and just trying to hope in some way, shape, or form that they can keep Giannis and get him happy, buy themselves a little bit more time before he decides he's lost too much in Milwaukee, he wants out.
Everything you've seen or heard from John Horse has been along the lines of, well, we have draft capital to use. So the lottery's coming up. They get the ability to trade additional draft picks in the future to help shape the roster. And to me, it doesn't point to, well, there's somebody in the draft that they're targeting that's going to immediately help. What it seems to me is that they're looking at the draft picks as a way to retool and restock the roster around Giannis. If they have 3 to trade, including this year, that's what I see. And I think that'll be the next move made. It's going to be some kind of draft pick trade, whether it's draft night or beforehand. But that's kind of what I'm seeing. But yeah, I think it all kind of ties around to, do they think that they're going to have Giannis for at least another year or longer, or are they ready to move on? And I think anything we see with a trade involving draft picks is going to do that, because obviously anything, if you trade Giannis, you're going to get a whole bunch of draft capital in return, or at least that's the expectation. So that's kind of where I'm leaning. I think what's next is going to be some kind of trade involving one of their three draft pick assets. Number three in our top eight at eight, Badgers football recruiting has hit a bit different this year. And what I mean by that is that they have recruited a lot of in-state players to commit to their upcoming class. Also, they get a legacy at quarterback. The son of Jim Sorgi, Jack Sorgi, has committed to Wisconsin, a four-star prospect, and it just seems like every time you open up Twitter, there's a three- or four-star commit to Wisconsin in the upcoming class. So does the recruiting and all the transfer-ins and the spring ball, has that made you more, less, or just as excited for this fall in Madison?
I'll say it kept me at the same level, but changed my reasoning. You know, and I've gone from worried to a little bit more optimistic. So I'll say I'm more excited. We need to figure out what we're doing. We need to find out whether we can tread water. And if not, we need to figure out how to swim. And I know I'm the analogy guy. It's NIL money. They're drowning in the sea of schools with more money. What do we do? How do we make ours? What is our place in the current system? All questions the Badgers need to answer. Parker, what do you see happening?
I am seeing the Badgers actually figure out how to be the Badgers again, frankly. The Badgers, for a long time, kind of took pride in being able to get those in-state guys. First name that comes to mind for me is J.J. Watt. You love to keep those in-state guys, and now that they're actually going to do that, I think that there is very clearly an effort at reconfiguring the culture of Badger football. I think that this is going to be a really good thing. That does make me more excited. I will contest, though, Jimmy, about getting names for quarterbacks and these star recruits. That's kind of how it's been for all Fickle's time. There was a way back when Fickle first came in, there was a brief period where I'm pretty sure that I put this online. I think I might have tweeted this. We were worried about how many quarterbacks were coming in because we had too many to know what to do with them. And none of them have panned out to be A, healthy, or B, very good. So I take that with a grain of salt, seeing some of those recruits.
Got a couple minutes here, so I'm going to sneak in number two in our top 8 at 8 real quick before the break. And this is a football question, and it'll set us up nicely for what we do here in about 20 minutes. The Packers have picked up the fifth-year option on Lucas Van Ness, so are you expecting him to bounce back this year after some injuries last year, Gray?
In a word, yes, absolutely. If only because of the injury, but Van Ness has never lived up to the potential you want to see out of a first-round draft pick. And, of course, that's why this fifth-round option is available. The Packers have shown they're willing to deny the fifth-round option if they think it puts them in a better position, but that's also bitten them recently. Quay Walker's a Raider right now. We could have locked him down for another season had they chosen to bet on Quay. So that's basically the line, the yardstick I'm measuring with. It sounds like the Packers expect LVN to improve like Quay Walker did last year. If not, it wasn't worth this gamble. Parker, are you an LVN guy, or are you thinking we move on?
I'm thinking that we can afford to give him another effort here. You started to see him a little bit last year, a little bit better last year. Not incredibly good, but certainly better than I think the first couple of years were with him. And I'm very rose-colored glasses this morning, guys. I am really hopeful that this guy can come through. I think LVN has got a chance of being really impactful for the Packers, but he's got a short leash for sure.
Well, Parker, that eternal optimism is going to serve you extremely well in our next segment. Ooh. When we get to number one in our top 8 at 8. Hint, it's a baseball topic. And we'll have that coming up for you here in just a moment. Coming up later in the program, Mike Clemens will join us, and we will talk more about all the things happening in sports, Bucks, Brewers, Packers, everything happening. And also coming up here at the bottom of the hour, about 20 minutes from now, we are going to go through the Packers NFL draft this year, pick by pick, and offer some analysis on all six of the Packers draft picks. This is Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Happy weekend to you. It is Make the Call here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're into the month of May, which means that it is time to talk all things baseball. For this whole segment, we're going to talk Brewers. In about 10 minutes, we're going to take a deep dive on the Packers NFL draft this year. But right now, going to talk some Brewers. It is number one in our top 8 at 8. We are a month into the season, a month in change, as the Brewers taking on the Nationals in a series this weekend. But we're a month in. The Brewers are currently situated in fourth place in the NL Central. But there's some reason for some optimism, despite some recent injuries in the pitching staff. There are some hitters that are set to come back. And, of course, the Brewers never really feel like they're out of it. I've heard it a lot said in baseball, guys, that you could play your way out of contention in April, but you can't win any division titles in April. And I think the Brewers have not cost themselves any division titles or any pennants or anything like that in the first month. They are over 500 heading here into the month of May. So the question at number one in the top 8 at 8 is, a month in, are the Brewers still contenders in your view? And I'm asking this because, again, it wasn't that long ago. They were actually in last place in their division, the NL Central, which has every team over 500, of course. But the Brewers going into the month of May, I feel like there's probably a few things that might be concerning, especially on the injury front. But there's also, I think, a number of reasons why people can be optimistic. And because we ended the last segment with eternal optimism, I want to bring it back to that. So, Parker, I'm going to start with you. Are you still viewing the Brewers as contenders this year?
I'm definitely still viewing them as contenders. I don't know how hot I am on them winning the division necessarily. I've been very impressed with, I believe, the Reds right now. I think their record is like 20-11 or so, if I remember right.
Like they've, yeah, it's like almost 10 games over 500 a month in.
Yeah, they're doing incredibly well. And for a Reds team, that's not quite what I expected, to be perfectly honest with you. I was kind of banking on the Reds kind of being more of what the Brewers are right now, right? A little bit above 500. I think that the Reds to be able to maintain that would be very, very impressive, because that's a Reds team that has not quite had the success that you would be aiming for typically. And the Cubs as well, though. The Cubs are also, I think, a good handful of games. I want to say like 7 or 8 games above 500 as well. So that is another team that you really need to worry about just within your own division. So it's going to be really hard for the Brewers, I think, even only being, what, 4 games back maybe of the division. It's going to be pretty tough for them. They've got a lot of tough competition, and we haven't even really gotten into those in-division games yet, right? The Brewers, I don't think, have played any. Oh, no, they played the Pirates. They played the Pirates, and I believe that they play the Cardinals either this weekend or later on this week. So it'll be interesting to see what they can do once they actually get into those division games and see if they can actually kind of give themselves a leg up as they beat some of those opponents that they're trying to catch up to. Gray, what is your take on, as you see this Brewers team sitting around 500 right now, but you've got a couple of teams that are way above 500, kind of what does that do for your mindset as the Brewers are a month in here?
It has me a little bit pessimistic, Parker, only because of those general trends. I have to stick to the broad strokes, to the wider angles, because of my lack of baseball knowledge. But what I see from the Brewers so far, even someone with this kind of armchair kind of perspective, I feel like it looks like, hey, there's some things to like, there's some things to worry about, but is there enough to like the team in a crowded division? How often have you seen a pretty solid team coexisting with some Titans? And it's like, man, on another year, you guys would be looking like part of a top-heavy conference, part of the top of that conference. But right now, let's be real, they're tied for the fewest wins in the NL Central, and it's totally, totally crowded right now. So yeah, it's early enough that things could shift. If a couple things fall their way, great. If a couple things don't, I don't like their chances. They're right on the cusp right now, as far as I'm concerned.
I think I look at this. There's Pythagorean theorem, right? It's math. We all learned it like 8th grade, mm-hmm. whatever. But you look at run differential, and the Brewers are 3rd in run differential right now in the National League. A couple of teams are far ahead. Brewers are 3rd as going into the weekend. They were, you know, about 20 runs behind in run differential the other teams. And I think that has been a pretty frequently cited stat in terms of whether a team can move up or down. And the other stat you look at, obviously, is runs allowed. How are they limiting runs? Because, you know, scoring runs tends to be a little easier. You can usually afford bats more than pitching. Hitting can be a little more reliable than pitching sometimes. And again, they're 3rd in runs allowed in the National League. So I look at those as positive things after a month. You can chalk up a good run differential and a poor record is just bad luck. And at the same time, you can look at a team like the Reds, we were just talking about, 10 games over 500, and their run differential is I think single digits in the positive. So that tells you that they've had exceptional luck. Or, you know, you can look at, you know, one run games or look at any of the number of factors. But I think run differential and overall record pretty tightly correlate going over a much larger data set. I don't think 30-ish games is enough to tell you with run differential where things can go. And as Parker mentioned, the Brewers have played it on schedule. They've played a lot of AL teams so far.
And I think, too, that when you're talking about run differential here, it's really important to remember, I think that was the number two in our top 8-8 here. They haven't had Churio or Vaughn for the entire season. So, again, 30 games, not a great sample size for a 162-game season. But those guys are definitely going to help you out. And I think that that should be a very good reason to keep being optimistic about how good the Brewers can be going forward here. Those pitching concerns, though, like we talked about earlier, Angel Zerpa, I believe, went out. Trevor McGill has kind of struggled, although he looks to be getting his footing back. That late in games bullpen is going to be something to really keep your eye on here, because the Brewers are so used to having a 1-2 punch at the end of games, and I'm not sure that they've got that concrete yet this year.
It just feels like they'll find something out of nowhere, though. It'll materialize. Like some rando will be, oh yeah, by the way, I'm the closer now. 30 saves later, we're wondering why we were sweating this whole time. But I will say this: having a good run differential and a low number of runs allowed, I feel like is good for long term prospects. Despite the fact that everybody in the NL Central is playing out of their minds right now, these things regress to the mean at some point. And I think especially for a team like the Reds, who are kind of playing with fire, where they've given up a lot of runs this year, I feel like they'll come back down to earth a bit as well. Speaking of coming back down to earth, we will bring in some stability to the program. Mike Clemens will join us here in a half an hour to break down all things sports here across Wisconsin. But coming up next, it's a deep dive time on the NFL draft. The Packers made 6 selections, and we're going to talk about all of them coming up next right here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
Halfway through here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network, Jimmy, Gray, Parker, all hanging out. And in this segment, we're going to talk NFL draft. The Packers made 6 picks last weekend in the draft held in Pittsburgh. Our own Mike Clemens was on hand in Green Bay in the war room to take in all the notes on all the players the Packers have drafted. 6 of them to be in total here, and we will talk about all of them right now. Mike will, by the way, be joining us in about 15 minutes from now. Well, let's talk about it. Packers make 6 picks in the NFL draft. They did not pick until the second round of the NFL draft. And with the 52nd overall pick, round 2, the Packers pick up Brandon Cisse, and they pick him up out of South Carolina. And what he brings to the table is a good mix of skills on the outside for Green Bay.
You know, just a player that can play everywhere, play fast, physical, relentless, be a student of the game, and just looking to contribute any way they want me to contribute from day one and give the organization everything I have.
So, Gray, when you think about Packers' needs, defensive back was certainly very high, if not the highest among them going into this draft.
100%, Jimmy. Undeniably, fans will agree, coaches agree, and you don't get that very often. Real quick, before we dive into Cisse here, a quick disclaimer. The Packers drafted almost exclusively defense, 1 offensive lineman, 1 kicker, everybody else defense, and they have a new defensive coordinator. So what's coming in the future? Kind of tough to see. If it were Jeff Hafley sticking around, we'd have a bit of a better idea how these players will be used. But the Packers making a couple clear moves, starting with Brandon Cisse. High athletic scores and some rough edges for almost every player they drafted. You look at relative athletic score, how fast are they, how big are they compared to the other players at their position, and it's scored on a scale out of 10. Brandon Cisse scores a 9.2, which means he's bigger, faster, and stronger than almost all the other corners out there. Long story short, the Packers needed to stop getting torn up by tight ends. They're little corners. Players like Carrington Valentine, you remember how Dallas Goedert ragdolled him last year? Not allowed to happen again. And the moves that the Packers made at the corner position are clearly leaning that way. We'll talk about it again when we get down to the later rounds. They grabbed another corner who is even bigger than Cisse, and they added St. Juste, Benjamin St. Juste from the Chargers. St. Juste is 6'3". You don't see many corners that size. They don't want those tight ends going up over the guys again this fall. And I think we've seen exactly that with this first pick. Parker, what was your thinking when you saw a cornerback first? For me, it was, Ah.
Yes, ah, is a very good way to put it. I think that this is a theme that you kind of hit on there, and I think we're going to see throughout this segment here. The Packers addressed pretty much all of their needs, and they got to it pretty quick here with Cisse. You mentioned some rough edges, that I think a lot of Packers have. Tackling is kind of one of those things that Cisse might have to work on. It was what I was reading in some reports. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a great, good pick, good first pick for the Packers early on, or middle of day two there. I'm pretty confident about this guy going forward. And Jimmy, I'm excited about the new defensive tackle as well.
Yeah, let's move right ahead, because the Packers, in a couple of moves in this draft, made trades up to get guys. And the first of those is Chris McClellan, defensive lineman out of Missouri. And I think this was an interesting pick because there was a very clear need for interior defensive linemen as well as edge rushers in whatever defense they're going to play. And what McClellan can do is he can do just about everything.
You know, I can play anywhere across the line, and that's what I'm willing to do. Wherever they need me to go, I'll go and play and contribute and just help the team in whatever way I can. I don't care if I have to be a zero nose or a five technique. Wherever I can go to play and help the team is where I want to be.
Gray, when we talk about the Packers picks, and I think you were alluding to this when we were talking about Cisse, is that with a new defensive coordinator, we're not sure where these guys will fit, but a lot of these guys have versatility in their portfolio of skills.
And that's going to have to be, Jimmy, because there's already been some rumors and even some interview answers that point to maybe not a clean departure from the 4-3 versus 3-4. It might be a little bit of a blend. But that said, Jonathan Gannon is known to run a different defensive front than Jeff Hafley did. So it sounds like there will be a general return to that 3-4 front that the Packers saw under previous defensive coordinators. Everyone back through Capers was running that three-man front. That said, where does that leave Packers' existing players? It's a big old we'll see. With McClellan specifically, I'm super curious what's going to come of him, because he's kind of the proof the Packers just didn't go out there and grab all the big, fast guys. He is big. He is quick once he gets through the offensive line, but his general athletic performance is actually kind of near the bottom of the list for defensive tackles. That said, the Packers traded to get him, so they see something they believe in, and he did a lot of overpowering. McClellan relied on power to break through a lot of offensive lines. That may or may not work in the NFL. So I'll be honest, when I saw the move up to get McClellan, I thought, ooh, I worry a little bit. I wonder what they see. But the only defensive staffer who's still on from last year was defensive line focused. Now an outside linebackers coach, DeMarcus Covington, formerly with the New England Patriots. So maybe he had some input. He's around longer than anybody else, and they kept the coach around for a reason. Parker, what do you see when you see McClellan?
First thing I saw was kind of a wrecking ball, honestly. I think that he's going to be really good against the run. And like you said, he's going to try to overpower guys. I'm very interested to see how that goes now that he's in the NFL. It's the couple of things that you hear right away are that the game is faster in the NFL and it's stronger in the NFL. So it'll be really interesting to see if he is able to kick it into gear against the NFL O-linemen.
The Packers, with their third pick in the draft, round four, pick 120, stayed on defense, and they stayed on the outside where they got to need Dennis Sutton out of Penn State. So they bring in an edge rusher to bolster that part after seeing some notable departures here this offseason from the program. So what does he bring to the pass rush for the Packers?
I'd say really pass rush has always been something that I've been natural at doing and things like that. But I agree. I feel like, you know, just attacking the football is something that, just like you said, comes natural. Just going for the ball, punching the ball. At Penn State, Coach Franklin, he did a great job of preaching the ball is a program. So on offense, you know, preaching ball security, and on defense, attacking the football. And we work every single day in practice. And those are game-changing plays. You know, sacks are great, but strip sacks are better. Forced fumbles are better. And you know, that's the type of player I try and be. So just being conscious of that and making it part of, you know, muscle memory is how you really get better at those things.
So the Packers, now, with a clear need on the edge, are looking here to, again, replace some very notable and expensive departures from that position group, Gray.
The question on this one, Jimmy, is, will this be a serviceable replacement even for Rashawn Gary? When you've got a guy like this, you know, we talked with, when we were looking at Brandon Cisse earlier, relative athletic score, where do you fall with speed, power, and size compared to your position? If you're scoring at almost 10, that means not only are you bigger, you're faster, and you're stronger than almost everybody in your position, and that's denied Dennis Sutton 9.96 out of 10. That means he's the biggest, fastest, and strongest all in one body. So how do you fall to the fourth round? Well, those rough edges we mentioned, it's rough edges all over this pick, and denied Dennis Sutton might be the roughest edges. He falls for fakes. It's the biggest thing. You watch tape on him, and he's making bad reads. A standard play-action pass probably has denied Dennis Sutton fooled right now, unless they can get him some discipline on those fakes. He also struggles a little bit with side-to-side movement, which is one of the more powerful tools in the toolbox of an edge rusher. You send somebody where you thought Dennis Sutton would be, and you have Dennis Sutton swing over one gap quickly, and it's called a stunt. They're going to run a lot of them. Even Jonathan Gannon, we can guarantee, is going to run stunts. And he struggles with them a little bit, so I'm a little bit worried there. But that said, if he can get his discipline down, stop falling for fakes, and by the way, stop letting a single little wiggle from a running back be enough to make you miss a tackle by a mile, clean those up, and you've got, I mean, one of the most frightening athletes. I'm thinking, honestly, my comparison there, if he figures the discipline out, he reminds me of J.J. Watt. There's just nobody you can put in front of him who I like better. But right now, he's just too easy to fool. Parker, have you watched much from Dennis Sutton yet?
I've not got to see a bunch of it, but I know that he's a Penn State kid, and I know another Penn State kid that you've got on this Packers defense. And much like you're going to be able to say this about anybody that's on that side of the ball for the Packers, this guy is really going to benefit by being around Micah Parsons, not just while we're actually playing here during plays. Like, obviously, guys will move over towards Parsons, but he's actually going to, I think, help him develop right here. So this could be, those rough edges might get smoothed out pretty quickly.
The first pick of day three of the NFL draft for the Packers came at pick 153. In the fifth round, they go with Jagger Burton out of Kentucky, who plays interior offensive line. And, well, he's willing to play just about anywhere the Packers tell him to.
For me, I don't really have a preference. Just whatever is going to help, you know, the Packers win games at the end of the day. That's all I care about now. So I think that was something that Coach Jack Yenzer and Coach Eric Wolford at Kentucky both did a great job of, was just making sure guys are ready to play, you know, numerous positions, and putting us in a good situation for, you know, trying to get to the point that I'm at right now, and just knowing how important that is at the next level. So they did a great job of just developing, you know, all our guys with flexibility to play left, right, center, or swing tackles, things like that.
Packers have had a long history of versatile offensive linemen in the draft.
And that's going to continue with Jagger Burton 100%. A natural center, so there is a bit of a question where he'll spend most of his time, but he's not expected to start right now. The Packers starting five is set. Usually things go the other direction. Packers like to grab a left tackle from a college team because they're usually the best and convert him to guard, but it sounds like Burton's expected to do a little bit of everything. But again, probably going to keep him a backup, at least for now, unless something bad happens. I don't want to see Burton on the field much. That will be my first good sign. But I also expect him to play well.
At the sixth round, their first pick in the sixth round at pick 201, they went to the SEC again, this time to Monty Jackson, another defensive back picked by the Packers. And Jackson is going to be bringing a little bit of oomph to that outside position.
I'm a physical corner, I like to say. I can play in space. You know, just really dialing in on pre-snap rituals and QB tendencies and their favorite receivers, just little stuff like that. You know, everything pre-snap, I feel like I really gained knowledge from my junior year to my senior year. And, you know, I'm ready for the next level.
So we've got another defensive back. And Gray, you talked a lot about this before, but they needed some size out there. And, well, they get it with Jackson.
That's right. He's actually over the 6 foot mark, which makes him a little uncommon amongst NFL defensive backs, has all those physical traits and an apparently high ceiling. But the problem was he was ineffective last season. He was actually benched halfway through his senior year and had to regain his starting position. So again, if he can put it together, if he can meet that ceiling, if Green Bay can instill some discipline, I like this for some serious late round value. No question why he slid though, Jimmy.
Let's get the final pick up here, and this is another sixth-round pick. They traded away the seventh-round picks to get him, and the Packers went for a kicker. They pick up Trey Smack out of Florida, who says he's kicked in cold weather before.
I grew up in Maryland, so it's not new to me, or, you know, it's always done it. You know, it's kind of how I started out kicking, is kicking in cold weather. You know, I kicked a couple years ago during Christmas, probably like 8 years ago, and it was snowing here, so I'm pretty used to it, but it's a little different in Gainesville, and I got to get back in that cold weather rhythm that I had before.
Yeah, Florida and Wisconsin just a little bit different, but not surprising after the playoff game that the Packers addressed kicker Gray.
He went from diet cold to no cold to serious cold. So he's going to have to recalibrate for sure, but I like his chances. Honestly, I like this pick way too much for it at the sixth round. It's Trey Smack. Traded up to get a kicker named Trey Smack. Hey, fans, Crosby has reassured us, Mason Crosby, that is, that this is not like a couple years ago when they drafted Anders Carlson. Smack has traditional, steady mechanics. Carlson does weird stuff, and that's why it didn't work. Smack's expected to succeed here, where Carlson did not, but he still has to compete with Brandon McManus, who was extended last year.
I really like this pick, and obviously the Packers really like this pick. They traded up to get him. And how can you be against a guy, a kicker, whose name is Smack? Come on, boys. The vibes are immaculate here.
Boy, he really smacked that one in there for the game winner. Boy, the headlines just write themselves, right? And just think, if he ever called into Jim Rome, you have Van Smack and Trey Smack. That'd be just great. Great radio to listen to. All right, that's enough of that. We had a lot of fun covering the Packers NFL draft picks, all six of them. And a big thanks to Mike Clemens for gathering all that audio for us. And speaking of Mike, he's coming up next right here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Make the Call on Civic Media.
One final time here on Make the Call. Mike Clemens standing by to get us an update on all things sports. But, you know, in light of our draft conversation, one thing we didn't talk about was some of the things the Packers didn't address. In the draft anyway, specifically, and one of those areas was backup quarterback. And here's what Coach Matt LaFleur had to say about the backup quarterback situation in Green Bay.
I think we all know how we felt about Malik and his ability to go out there and, give us a chance to go win games. And he did exactly that. So I think it's a work in progress. You know, I don't want to speak too early. I mean, we've only done classroom work with these guys. I mean, we had a limited exposure to Desmond last year. But what I can say is those guys are doing a great job in the meetings, and we're looking forward to getting our hands on them as we progress into phase two.
So that again, Coach Matt LaFleur speaking on backup quarterbacks. Great. It just feels like there's still another move to make here.
There is. There absolutely is. I don't think the ceiling we've seen from Desmond Ridder is high enough for the Tastes. And I know they're spoiled a little bit with Malik Willis providing some of the best backup play for a long time for any team. So I feel like you're right in that there is a move to make. But if there's not somebody who stands out in some way, I expect Ridder to be the one who sticks. This has traditionally been a high value late round pick for backup quarterbacks. Jordan Love notwithstanding, obviously, Aaron Rodgers. They pick their starters in the first. They pick their backups up later. Don't be surprised if it's somebody you've counted out. You know, nobody expected Malik Willis to pop up. So the Packers spot value there. Where? I honestly don't know right now. A big old IDK. That's what I expect. But Ridder is my safe pick. Parker, what do you think?
Yeah, I definitely would be going with Ridder as well. Out of what the existing room is right now for the... behind Love, duh. I would like to see them pick up somebody else, but frankly, they're going to be okay. Pitchers are kind of one of those things that you don't, or excuse me, quarterbacks are kind of like pitchers. You're not too worried until you don't have one. So we'll see what happens. I think that they can get away with not picking anyone up for a little while longer here.
Pitchers, quarterbacks, they throw the ball. It's all the same.
Exactly.
All right. Hey, I appreciate you guys. This week, a lot of fun, and we'll see you again here next week.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Mike Clemens will get us an update on all things sports right now here on Make the Call, part of the Civic Media Radio Network. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Another Brewers injury. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports Baseball. The Brewers in Washington, D.C. this weekend for a three-game series against the Nationals, one of the better teams offensively so far this season. Friday night, the Brewers beat the Nats 6-1, but the Brewers starting pitcher, Jacob Mizorowski, had to leave the game. The Miz had a no-hitter going into the sixth inning. The word was he had suffered a cramp in his right hamstring. Was that accurate?
Yeah, just hamstring cramp. Didn't want to push through it. You know, thought better to, you know, turn it over to the bullpen. And so, no, felt, you know, as good as I can.
Brewers manager Pat Murphy on how Mizorowski performed Friday night.
He had good stuff, but he didn't have his great rhythm, great timing. So he threw a lot of balls, but he was very effective and pitched great for 5 1/3. Then he cramped, and we feel pretty good about it. We're not going to test it right now because we're afraid he might cramp again. So we'll see what it is tomorrow. We're very hopeful. He feels good about it. Hopeful that's all it was.
Veteran Brandon Woodruff had to leave in the second inning in Milwaukee on Thursday's game. An MRI showed it was inflammation in his shoulder that was bothering him. Woodruff could only throw at the most 86 miles per hour. He's going to rest it for now. College basketball, Wisconsin forward Nolan Winter announced his decision this week. He wants to finish his senior year playing one more season for the Badgers.
Having a lot of talks pretty much the day after the season ended with everyone, and a couple weeks after, you know, we made up our minds and decided Wisconsin was the best fit for me as a basketball player and a person, and it's where I'm the happiest.
The NCAA has proposed expanding the March Madness tournament from 68 teams to 76 next year for both men and women's basketball. Wisconsin Badgers head coach Greg Gard was asked if he supports adding 8 more teams to the big dance.
I am. Whenever I've been asked, I've been a proponent of it just because of portal NIL, the transient nature. Sometimes what gets lost is the experiences that you provide your student athletes. That experience is obviously a pinnacle of a college athlete's career.
NFL, the Packers wrapped up their draft last weekend, adding 6 new players. 4 on defense, 1 on offense, another on special teams. That's place kicker Trey Smack out of Florida. The Packers gave up 2 seventh-round picks to trade up to get him in the 6th round. So what does that mean for the Packers' veteran kicker, Brandon McManus, who had a quad injury last season and missed some time, then in the playoff game in Chicago missed 3 kicks that cost them 7 points and maybe the game? Packers GM Brian Gutekunst.
Brandon's been excellent for us in his time with us, with the exception of that past game, which I think, you know, we all recognize. But I feel it's important that we address that and have a guy who can go win us games.
Former Packers kicker Mason Crosby.
It's funny that that's the mindset, right? Like, you can't trade up to go get a kicker. That's ridiculous. But, you know, they saw value at it. This guy was a great college kicker, was the top-rated kicker in this draft. And you kind of feel like, okay, we have a veteran guy. He's coming off some injuries through the season, not his best year. Let's build some competition. Obviously, Brandon's done it for a long time, but, you know, there's been moments of inconsistency.
This weekend, the draft picks and undrafted players that the team signed are in Green Bay for their rookie minicamp. Packers rookie defensive back Brandon Cisse out of South Carolina on what he hopes to accomplish during the team's offseason program.
I think it starts with, you know, taking and learn from the vets. You know, like, those guys have been in the league for a long time, and those are guys that have experience. So trying to learn ins and outs, sometimes it's just best to shut up and, you know, learn from the guys in front of you first. And just coming from a humble place, and whatever they tell me, I know they're telling me out of a place of respect. So just coming in ready to work and ready to learn, and just keep improving every day.
Jagger Burton is a center out of Kentucky, drafted by the Packers, and at the mini camp this weekend.
A big thing with the rookie mini camp is just getting the playbook in front of us and kind of having that separate from the veterans who already know this stuff so good, for us to kind of at least get an idea of stuff before jumping into it with them. We've just been studying at the hotel and stuff, trying to get it down together, so it's been awesome.
The Packers' 4th-round pick is impressive. 6'5", 250-pound linebacker Denai Dennis Sutton out of Penn State. I asked him if he'd been in contact with his Penn State alum, the Packers' Micah Parsons.
He hit me right after. Yeah, so right after everything happened, he hit me. Obviously, he's come back to Penn State a couple times, but I've talked to him just trying to get some advice already, but he'll be here soon and just be ready to work.
And just before the May 1st deadline, the Packers picked up the 5th-year option on defensive end Lucas Van Ness, which will pay him over $14 million this season. Matt LaFleur.
Yeah, Lucas is, I mean, he's an important piece, man. And I know he's been kind of snake bit with some of the injury stuff. He looks great, and I know he's in a good headspace, so I'm excited for him.
That's Packers head coach Matt LaFleur. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.